Hello, this is the Catholic State, and I'm joined here today by my good friend and fellow parishioner, Attorney Patrice.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about dialectics. So if you don't know what dialectics are, I'm just going to give you a crash course real quick. Dialectics, they've been around forever, since the beginning of philosophy, basically. Dialectic essentially is when you have an argument on one side, and then you have a counter argument on another side, right? And sometimes you can posit each argument against each other and synthesize that argument. That's usually what we refer to as Hegelian dialectics. To give you just a really easy example, I was just talking to Attorney Patrice about this before we started. An easy example for people that want something visual is, look at two colors, black and white, right? Now, white is like a thesis. It's one color that's on the one side of the spectrum, and black is on the total opposite side. So they're completely different. So white is the thesis, black is the antithesis, and if you synthesize them together, you get gray. Now, sometimes that works. Well, like in colors, you can get gray, but you have to understand that gray is neither black nor white. It's something else. And the problem really comes in when you try to synthesize the truth with a lie. The truth is the thesis. The lie is the antithesis. And when you synthesize them together, it's also a lie, because the truth can't be synthesized with a lie. So we're going to talk about that today. So go ahead, Attorney Patrice, and take it from here.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, just to introduce the topic as well, I would, you know, say is similar to like revolution. It's actually a similar idea, really. The idea that there's this constant struggle that's proceeding forward and always changing. Something new is always around the corner. And really, too, I don't know. I think that the cultural dialectics of Karl Marx and Saul Alinsky are the main things that come to mind. But obviously you can go back much further, because like even Saul Alinsky talked about, like in Rules for Radicals, I don't know if you've read that, but in Rules for Radicals, he dedicates book to the original revolutionary, Satan. So, yeah. Of course,
it's right there. Yeah. When you open the book, he dedicates it. Yeah, it's like to the ultimate revolutionary, Lucifer or something. Yeah. It's like, what?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think similar to like that comment and that idea is like the original or the master dialectician is Satan, you know, so it starts with this conflict that he has with God. And he wants to pit Adam against Eve, and Eve against Adam, and Adam and Eve against God. And so the dialectics begin, you know, right in the beginning with this struggle, which is always, you know, sort of Satan basically trying to bring about his own, you know, plans, his own purpose, his own will. And it's obviously ends in chaos. And so, yeah, I mean, the opposite of chaos is order. And the only way to have that order is through the peace that God alone can establish. And obviously from day one, from like the beginning of the dialectics with Satan, God set about to bring order to all things, which is kind of the opposite of chaos. So you have God working to restore order and Satan working to continue to drive a wedge between people. So, and of course, he's looking for, he's looking for people who will help him, agents who will aid him in this work of dialectics, pinning people against each other. So, yeah.
Yeah. And those agents, I mean, if you look at the early life of Saul Alinsky and Karl Marx, those agents are his Satan synagogue, as it turns out. And I know Dr. Deep State, Dr. Doug Haugen, excuse me, and Will Tucker recently did a podcast video on this too, where they talked about how the Kabbalah, the Jewish Kabbalah, and I think specifically maybe the Zohar, but it talks about how like Jews think God is broken. Like they don't have the same concept of God as we do. Like we think God is whole. He's one. He's being. He's simple. Like in his in his nature, and that doesn't mean he's simple-minded or anything, folks. I'm saying, like, from a, like, his being is just composed of one simple part, because he is the creator of everything, and he doesn't, there are no components to God. He is one, he is love, he is being itself. So this is very much an ontological, simplicity that I'm talking about here. But anyways, Jews don't think that. They think God, basically, when he created the world, or he created the universe, that he had to recede, and an empty part was created. So there's God, and then there's his creation, and then God and his creation need to be reconciled and synthesized, and essentially something better than God has to be created. So this is really what we see in society with this revolutionary mindset is Jewish in nature. And that's what I think people don't understand. We've seen, like, the in the past several hundred years, we've had all these revolutions in different countries. And if you look at it historically, it's always a Freemason, pretty much, that like it was in the United States and France and all over, like, Latin America, when they had their wars of independence and everything. But even the Masonic ideology is Jewish in nature, if you look into it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's all about breaking down and building back up, and therein lies, like, the dialectic again.
Exactly.
In order to recreate the world according to their own liking, they actually have to tear things down, and that's, you know, so they call themselves the builders, and they're the ones who are going to rebuild the world according to either their own liking or their master's own liking, or you know, really what and who is behind Freemasonry. You know, obviously there's been a lot of you know, study and work on that, you know, there were people pulling strings, but I mean, obviously it has occult written all over it. That's one of the clearest things. I mean, anyone who researches the Masons, you see it's riddled with the occult. And so it's like you're saying too, like with the Kabbalah, the Jews, and, you know, this disordered view of, like, you know, basically needing to break things apart in order to put them back together. Or I guess some belief that things are already broken apart, and so we have to find the right mixture of things to, like, going forward to create the right balance, you know, so somehow it's up to us to figure out how to make the perfect world, rather than realize that God already made the perfect world. And, you know, the only way to live a happy, peaceful life and to stop fighting, stop having wars, stop constantly, like, having this struggle is through Christ and through his sacrifice. You know, this is where, like, great writers like Fahey, you know, Father Dennis Fahey, putting the emphasis on even the holy sacrifice of the Mass being the shedding of, really, the God-man, shedding of his blood once and for all, so that basically all the strife, all the wars, all of the constant dialectics can actually come to an end. And there's really two main agents that work against this supernatural life of grace. That comes from, as we understand it, the sacraments in the church, but specifically in a very special way, the Mass. There's these two agents working really strongly against that life of supernatural grace. Two groups that, again, as Father Fahey would call, are just like pure naturalists, and both of them have this very, I guess you could just call it worldly, very secular mindset. And of course, that's what they were all about. That's literally what they called their new world order, the Novus Ordo Secularum, which is on our money, you know, in the United States, it's right on our, printed on our money. And so, this secular world order, or this natural, worldview of the Jews, the Masons, really the dialecticians, is all about us continuing to basically do the work of an occultist or an alchemist, trying to put the right things together so that we can get the result or act through the things. And of course, that's really at the heart of it. Like with Marx, Karl Marx is pitting people against each other, putting sides against each other so that you can act through them and accomplish your goals. So
absolutely. So like going back to what Attorney Patrice was saying before, he was talking about dissolve and build back better,
yep.
Which really comes from, it's the, Baphomet, solve et coagula, which means it's Latin for dissolve and coagulate, or tear apart and put back together, right? And so essentially this is how the dialectic works. Going back to what I was, my definition that I gave in the beginning. So like when you look at Christendom, how it was before the revolution started, like especially the one in the United States and France. So back probably even before then, before the Protestant Revolution, you look at Christendom at the time, and it was a society. It wasn't not perfect societies. I'm not going to overstate our argument here, but very ordered societies. We, you know, the Christian Catholic societies were very ordered. Very, you know, like there were sinners, of course. There was sin, and there was bad stuff that happened. But it was very ordered societies, and so that is going, looking at the dialectic again. That is the thesis, and for the Judeo-Masonic types, they don't like that. They don't want that. Satan doesn't want that, right? So they have to create the antithesis, which is the revolution. That's what the Freemasons talk about, the revolution. That's what the Marxists talk about, the revolution. That is the antithesis. That is the opposite of the ordered society. That is disorder. And their goal is to use that dialectic to create a new society, a new kind of society that's not based around Christ like the original ordered society is, but rather it's based upon what Satan wants. Right. So this is why it's really important for Christians to understand how dialectics work, because this is what's been going on for several hundred years now in our Christian societies. And we essentially live in the United States. I would say it's not a Christian society. It's most definitely a Judeo-Freemasonic society, without a doubt. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, like this is why it's important to understand this type of philosophy. So I want to shift now, like to real world examples, because yeah. I think this will be helpful in so you can see what's actually going on. So let's talk about like our political structure in the United States. For instance, we have two political parties, and this isn't a coincidence, folks, that we have two political parties for a reason, and it's so it fits the dialectic. Yep. So we have the Democrats and we have the Republicans, and they both exist as a dialectic to lead to something that the Judeo-Freemasonic leaders want it to lead. So if you look at the Democrats and Republicans now, like both sides are pro-Jew, right? Both sides are pro-sodomy, right? Like, I got kicked off of the Republican Reddit a couple years ago because I was criticizing sodomy and gay people, right? So both sides are not Christian, really, in essence anymore, and that's by design, because what happens is the Republican Party exists only as a foil. They exist only as controlled opposition in order to appear to resist the Democrats, to appear to resist the revolution. But they don't actually resist the revolution. They just appear to resist. And what ends up happening is, in this appearance, is that they lose, like pretty much all the time or most of the time, right? And when they lose, it's because they're really throwing the game because they're not even trying to win. And what happens is this leads to the Overton window. And if you don't know what the Overton window is, you should look it up. It moves to the left just a bit more every time the Republicans fail to do anything useful, right? And this is why it's important to understand that the Republicans are not our friends. They are a part of this dialectic that will let the revolution constantly move to the left. And the left is where Satan's at. The right is where Christ is at. I mean, think about your Bible, folks. When Christ comes back, he says, he says the saints will be to his right, and he says the damned will be to his left, right? That's what he says. So when the Overton window moves to the left, it moves towards the revolution, towards Satan, and this is by design. It's like the Republicans exist as a ratchet. If you never heard of the ratchet effect, look that up too, along with the Overton window. The Republicans exist as a ratchet just to appear to be actual opposition, but they're not. They just exist to prevent the Overton window from actually moving back to the right towards Christ, back towards Christendom, and are just there for token resistance. Go ahead, Attorney Patrice. I spoke a lot there.
You're good. I think that's probably the most practical and obvious, at least here in America, where we have the red team and blue team. And it is the most obvious example. And historically, like, I guess, someone might bring up the issue then, well, but what about, historically, when, in terms of left and right politics, when, what about examples like when the fascists, got going? Like, isn't that an example of politically things moving to the right? What do you think about that? Like, with fascism, is that actually an example of moving right or something else?
So it's still another false dialectic.
Right.
Right? Because Father Fahey, Dennis Fahey, he talks about this in his books, but like the Nazi movement is not a counter-revolutionary movement. Like, we're trying to do as Catholics, we're trying to set things back to order. Mm-hmm. But rather, it's the Nazism and this far right stuff is actually another disordered movement that's actually a reactionary, and it's still pulling things. It's not pulling things back to the right towards Christ, so to speak, but it's pulling things in a different direction, but still towards the revolution. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I guess the big question then is just like, I think everyone's trying to figure it out. Well, then what is the right answer then? Like, if we're not to just fall into dialectics of picking some third option, what examples? First of all, what examples from history should we look at? I know a lot come to mind for me, but is that basically what we need to be like trying to figure out how to do counter revolution, but and still be like politically relevant, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the best examples to look at for counter revolution are like the War on the Vendée or the Cristeros War and stuff like that, where they're fighting for Christ the King. They're fighting against the revolution, but they're not fighting because they want to transform society into something else. They're fighting because they want to keep the society that they had.
Yeah.
They're fighting for restoration. And that's really what counter-revolution is it's fighting for restoration towards Christendom, towards Christ. Whereas like these far right reactionaries are more, they're not fighting to move the window towards Christ. They're fighting to move the window away from the revolutionaries they're fighting.
Right.
And you might say, well, okay, well, isn't that towards Christ?
Yeah.
It might be sometimes, but a lot of times it's just moving it away from the vision of the revolutionaries that are controlling everything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's still dialectics that appear to be exact opposites, but are actually moving towards the same direction. Let's look at this example. Look at the Jews and the Democrats and the Republicans. So the Jews and the Democrat Party are globalists. We all know that. This isn't the Democrats themselves are globalists. This isn't a secret. On the flip side, you look at the Republican Party, they're Zionists.
Right.
And again, like, this is mostly because of the neoconservatives in the Republican Party, which are historically Jewish. They were created by Irving Kristol, who's a Jew, and they basically disagreed with the other revolutionaries revolutionaries and the Democrats and became Republicans. But both sides are Jews, so you have globalist Jews and Zionist Jews, and you say, okay, well, they're exact opposites. They're against each other. So this is just an example of why it's not the Jews. This is, right. You know, and like people will say that, well, you know, they disagree. So obviously it's not the Jews running everything. Yeah. So, but that's, let's look at what they really want. If you read what they really want, like if you read the, protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, they make it clear what they want. They want both. They want globalism and Zionism. Yeah. They want the state of fake Israel that we like to call it, or faux Israel that we like to call it, because we don't recognize its existence here, right? Like it doesn't exist to us Catholics. But anyways, they want that state. They want that state to be its own nation. They want a nation of Jews, and they want that nation of Jews to run the world.
Yeah.
That's what they want. So they're not at odds. They appear to be at odds, but they want the same thing. They want to take that dialectic and make it look like they're oppose each other. They make this look like an opposition that actually exists, but in reality it doesn't, because they're gunning for the synthesis.
Yeah, Father Fahey said that the devil wants many religions in one nation, and God actually wants many nations in one religion. Which is obviously the true religion.
Right.
And this, I mean, it kind of fits with what you're saying about the globalists and the Zionists. It appears to be two different, ideas, two completely different ideas. I mean, even nationalism is obviously one of these things we understand to be supposedly opposed to the globalist agenda. And yet, The right wing in America works to help, you know, Zionist nationalists, and then the left is working to help solidify global control, global domination of a few elite, of which, a lot of those people are Jews. So, yeah, I mean, this definitely is an example of Jews being themselves master dialecticians. And of course, again, that shouldn't really be a surprise, because some of the most influential dialecticians that we know of were Jews, and really the origins of like cultural Marxism obviously is from Moses Mordecai, Karl Marx. So, and then Saul Alinsky as well, another Jew who really popularized it just in the last, you could say, I guess 100 years.
Don't forget the Frankfurt School, which is virtually all Jewish critical theory and all that garbage.
Yeah, what are some examples of counter-revolution that actually you're not getting caught up in a dialectic? You're not just acting revolutionary. I do kind of think that like these examples of people like Hitler or Mussolini or even Franco to a certain degree, although I would kind of classify Franco as being almost like something in between from what I've heard and seen. That actually, you know, and why I say that is because obviously monarchy was kind of the ideal, Catholic state. You know, if you look, at like the peak of Christendom, you know, monarchy would have actually been kind of like the perfect system where there was a concord between church and state, and the church actually had a special relationship with the state and wasn't just told by the state, you don't get to have any say. Mm-hmm. These revolutionary men, the Masons, the Jews, were successful in basically pushing out basically laicism. I mean, laicism, which is secularism, is all about removing the church's influence from the state. And that was probably, the purpose of that was their new world order. So, that's what they were able to accomplish. And so each of these men then sort of represents somebody who wants to, men like Hitler and stuff, they're wanting to put back in place something. And maybe you could say like someone like Hitler was a, idolized monarchy or whatever, and maybe wanted that power. But almost all these men, including Franco, kind of failed in like restoring the monarchy and restoring the Catholic state, basically. I think all of them represent kind of an example of not actually moving right, which you would, you know, which you've kind of described as being like away from the evil and towards the
Christ,
good. Yeah, towards Christ. But actually, they're actually doing what a conservative does. So the far left, if we want to call it the revolutionaries on the far left, the evil occult Jew Freemason, they take us a leap forward, and then usually it's these people who are like, oh, bring back the Republic or bring back democracy, like that are actually just taking us just a little bit away from the left, but only to then be, you know, it is that Overton window thing. They're only able to do so much. And I think even those men were actually only able to do so much.
Yeah. Well, and I don't even think they want to take it, although, like, maybe Franco did.
Yeah.
I like Franco, I'm going to give him a benefit of a doubt. I think he wanted to restore the monarchy, kind of, but he just, you know, with Juan Carlos and everything, it just, mm-hmm. he died and Juan Carlos just, within a year, he signed the Constitution. Oh, my gosh, to make it a Spain a liberal democracy, basically. But anyways, like, I don't think they always want to move it to all the way towards Christ. I mean, like, you look at Mussolini and stuff like that, it's like, you know, he was a politician. Like, when he was young, he was super anti-clerical, super mm-hmm. anti-church. And then, like, when he was, you know, trying to publicly make peace with the church, it was obviously just a formality. Now, I know, like, people will say, well, Padre Pio said he's... he went to purgatory. Okay, well, hopefully he did. I'm not going to say, you know, I hope he's in hell or anybody's in hell. But at the same time, it's like you look at him and you even look at Hitler. It's like, you know, they acted like, you know, they were the bringing it back to Christ. But then when push came to shove, like they did things that were not really in that direction, like eugenics and euthanasia and all this stuff where it's like, well... How was any of this Christian?
I mean, to me, the best modern example of the counter-revolutionary who basically just went full tilt. I'm going to restore. I'm going to make this country fully Catholic. You know, was Gabriel Garcia Moreno in Ecuador, and then of course he did. You know, because he was martyred. You know? Some of these other men died in battle, essentially, or were killed by mobs. Like Mussolini was killed by an angry mob.
Yeah,
you know, and that was condemned by the popes actually because it was evil and like heinous and you know, just barbaric.
I think Dollfuss showed some promise in Austria, but then he was killed pretty young. He was like around our age, you know,
mid-30s. He was assassinated by Hitler's men.
Yep, so, he was assassinated by the Nazis. He wanted to make Austria Catholic again.
I do think he's another good example, but of course he didn't. And to be fair, I don't know his full story because I haven't actually read the book, but I know enough to know that he's right up there too.
Right.
But Gabriel Garcia Moreno is a perfect example, just because you can see in every possible way he's making Ecuador Catholic, you know, and so then he dies a martyr's death for it. And of course, I mean, given the climate, it's like if you didn't die a martyr, it's questionable whether you were an actual counter-revolutionary because it was basically already set in stone. And I mean, there's reason to believe it probably wouldn't have worked. Because because we know actually at the beginning of the 20th century, Our Lady came and gave like a solution.
Yeah.
You know, so we have all these heroes for sure who are like admirable and we should Gabriel Garcia Moreno is the model statesman of a counter-revolution who is also engaged in politics and the cultural war. But at the same time, we do know, you know, about like Fatima and how, you know, Our Lady, you know, basically... you know, laid out what was needed and that was roughly ignored. And so then World War One, you know, drags eventually ends, but then World War Two comes and it's worse. And the errors of Russia, which really, include Marxism. It includes, Jewish world domination, basically.
Right.
The spread of this Bolshevik, you know, disease.
And really, you when you look at what happened the first world to the world wars, they're both of them were led to Jewish domination. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the state before World War One, mm-hmm. the state of Palestine, like this is yep. big, you know, on the news now, Palestine versus the false state of Israel. But before World One, Palestine was for Palestinians, for actually Semitic people, like real mm-hmm. Semites, you know, people that are actually living in the Near East. And then the Zionists, like Theodor Herzl, who went to Pope St. Pius the X and got rejected. I love that quote where Pope St. Pius the X says to Theodor Herzl, it's like, well, you Jews don't recognize our Lord, so
we don't recognize
Israel.
Yeah.
That's great. But anyways, yeah, I mean, the first two world wars were basically to seal. I honestly, like, obviously this is a not Catholic teaching here, and this is just my opinion, but I obviously believe the first two world wars were the Jews sacrificing millions and millions of goyim to Satan to basically get what they wanted, which was the state of false Israel, as we call it, and Marxism to spread all over the world. I honestly think that's what that was just a huge satanic sacrifice. Well, two huge satanic sacrifices.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy enough to see their hand if you're willing to do the research and follow the sort of the rabbit trail.
Yeah.
World War One and Two. And of course, like you said, with Palestine, one of the crucial pieces to that puzzle was not just world domination, which they achieved, but also a home for not just a home, but a capital for the world, for the one world religion,
mm-hmm.
which will be Jerusalem, which is also, as we understand it from the teachings of the fathers, and it is church teaching that, although it's not dogmatic, but there it is church teaching that the Antichrist will rule from Jerusalem.
Yeah. He'll be from the line of David too. He'll be from the line of Judah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this coming together of one world government with one nation left, basically. This is something I often say, but I'm just repeating a line from a Muse song. I used to really like listening to Muse a lot. And, but they have that line just that there are no countries left. And basically they're singing about globalism, actually.
Yeah.
They're recognizing that there's these, you know, sort of cosmic events all coming together right now that are, you know, globalists are solidifying their power and there are no countries left. Cause with globalism, there is no country. There's just one big global state. And then there's one nation, you know.
The only country that has a right to exist right now is Israel. Apparently,
which is why we're all supposed to, you know, weep bitter tears at when the media tells us, you know, something happened, you know. And I mean, how much longer until we're hearing, you know, we're getting reeducated about the 40 beheaded babies, you know?
Yeah.
That may or may not have even happened, I guess. Yeah.
I'm surprised they said it was 40 and not 6 million.
Yeah, I mean, give them time.
Yeah, it'll turn to 6 million somehow.
So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, I mean, that's going back to World War One, World War Two. I mean, all of it could have been avoided. We kind of know that if you know your like Catholic history, know your Catholic prophecy, private revelation, all that. We take that stuff pretty seriously, and we know that actually, like, God did want to put a stop to all that. And we know that, like, historically, there are certain, I mean, look, like, going back to the Old Testament, God raises up basically these pagan peoples to, like, oppose his own people, to chastise his own people. And we know that, like, throughout church history, God has used the Muslims were sort of the first, mm-hmm. and they will seemingly they'll continue to be an enemy of Christendom all the way to the end. But the Jews also, and of course this is like more so the last few hundred years of church history, basically that we then have to be worried about the Jews and that mm-hmm. in the sense of like, well, they are our overlords now, you know, whereas before they weren't, and they were, you know, there was this like anger boiling up, you know, from like the fact that the Catholic Church was pretty clear that like always be aware of Jewish control, Jewish right. perversion of the faith. You know, there were strict rules, as we understand from various councils and teachings yeah. and just like societal things, looking at like Catholic monarchies that like protected their people from this bad influence, this yeast, if you want to call it that, like yeah. our Lord said. But it's more the last couple hundred years, really. And I mean, the Zionist project was really underway in the 1800s. You can kind of trace and see like that's when they finally were able to start getting somewhere. And, you know, obviously we understand you could tie in the 6 million and, mm-hmm. and that began in the 1800s. But Jewish power, Jewish influence, Jewish ascendancy, I guess, within Christendom began in the 1800s. But of course, mm-hmm. or I guess that's when you can start to really see it. You could probably say it began with the fracturing of Christendom under Protestantism.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I would say the Protestant Revolution, but like even with the Protestant Revolution, I think this point needs to be made. Like essentially all heresy comes from a Judaizing. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at read the Bible, what is the first heresy? Well, it's in the Bible itself. It's the heresy of Judaizing. It's talked about in the book of Acts. It's talked about in the letters of St. Paul a lot. Yeah. And it's the first heresy, and it's it's an ongoing heresy. And Judaizing is essentially, I mean, it's denying grace in favor of, you know, like, whatever, the law works, you name it. And with Martin Luther, I mean, well, we can go that would be going on a tangent,
we should probably hold off and do a Protestant
talk. Protestantism is like, if you read like the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit by Dr. E. Michael Jones, he goes into how Protestantism was essentially part of the Jewish Revolution back in the 16th century, and even before the proto-Protestants, like who were like
Hussites
and the Waldensians, all of these. It was always Jewish revolutions, but anyways, in the Freemasonry, after the Protestant Revolution happened, and like then Freemasonry exposes itself. But if you look deep into Freemasonry, even it like has it's got a Jewish revolutionary mindset. Like the Freemasons essentially like. That's where liberalism comes from, is Freemasonry. Like, if you look at all of, like, virtually all the philosophers that created liberalism, like John Locke and Hume and Francis Bacon and all of them, they were all Freemasons. Yep. And so this, it all comes from this Jewish revolutionary spirit. So Freemasons are essentially, like, a goyish, shadow goyish arm of the synagogue of Satan when it really comes down to it. But anyways, I'll let it go back to Attorney Patrice. I just wanted to interject that right there.
Yeah. I mean, well, it does play into the dialectics. So when we're talking about, Protestants,
I mean, well, we were talking about Protestants. I mean, the dialectic, I think, is like, again, it's a dialectic of the church. I would say the church, the mm-hmm. Catholic Church, which is the ordered, and Protestantism, which is a disordered, like, ape, right? It's a disordered ape. It calls itself Protestantism, calls itself Christian, but there's no order there. Everybody gets to be their own pope. Everybody gets to be their own interpreter of Scripture. And when you have this order and disorder together, you know, but both competing for the title of Christian, that's the dialectic right there, right? So you have the dialectic, and now, unfortunately, with what we're seeing with the heresy of modernism within the last century or so, we're seeing that Protestant mentality bleed into the Catholic Church, the visible church. I'm not saying anybody that's actually a practicing Catholic can't be Protestant by it's like saying up can't be down. Like, you can't be both Catholic and Protestant. That's impossible. But I'm saying the Protestant mentality has infiltrated the Catholic Church, the visible church, and that's why you see many prelates and priests and laity that are in religious that are all essentially Protestant in their thinking, even though they call themselves Catholic.
I think going back to the original revolt, I guess, from the church is, you know, just it's a form of dialecticism because you have this exaggeration, like especially with someone like Luther, you have this like exaggeration of everything that he saw, and you know, obviously we know that he had a great deal of pride, but his rejection of basically the whole faith within a very short amount of time just kind of shows how really easily people can fall into just extremes. But, you know, getting pulled into it to a dialectic really is a diabolical thing, you know, getting basically the reactionary idea. You might start off with like culturally seeing something happening today that you think, you know, boy, this is wrong. And, you know, but then it seems to be almost exaggerated on the one side to the point then where it just festers and makes you more and more angry to the point where then you're finally willing to do something about it. And then what you're willing to do is, you know, ends up being used against, really, it ends up being used against you. And it's basically just, you're falling into the sort of a trap of like an overreaction.
It's an overreaction. Yeah. So. You're falling into like an equal, but opposite sin. Mm-hmm. It's like, so you look at what's happening today when in the United States and Europe, obviously like, you know, the great replacement, the clergy plan, you know, clergy was a Freemason who married a Jew. So clergy is Judeo-Freemasonic in its origin. But you see this happening, and like a lot of young white men see it happening. You know, we're young white men ourselves. We see it happening. And it's easy to fall into this equal but opposite reaction, this dialectic of like, not only getting really angry at Jews, but getting really angry at black people and at like Latinos and Middle Eastern people, like anybody that's not white.
Yeah.
And like even to the point of hatred. Mm-hmm. And that's what Satan does. Mm-hmm. Satan, like, I think people have to remember, Satan wants you to go to hell. And he will try to get you to go to hell any way he can. So he wants you to be on the revolution, right? Yeah. He wants you to be with the revolution and as a revolutionary. But if he can't get you that way, then he wants you to overreact. Mm-hmm. Because if you overreact, you'll do you'll send the opposite way, and then he's still got you, and he's still going to bring you to hell that way. Yeah. So you got to be mindful. Like this is spiritual warfare. These dialectics that Satan creates is spiritual warfare. Yeah. So you can't fall into them. You have to read the Bible, read the saints, read the magisterium, and really see what does the church teach. Mm-hmm. And generally, like if you look historically, the church teaches, you know, it's a new, Christ calls it a narrow path, right? And it's a centric path between two extremes. If you even look at, like, and I know you're big on this, Attorney Patrice, if you look at virtue theory, which comes from Aristotle and then St. Thomas Aquinas expounded upon, but if you look at virtue theory, virtue is always a moderation between two extreme vices, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what you got to remember here, folks, is that Satan, he wants to get you off the path one way or the other. Yeah. So always be mindful of the minds he's got laid out in front of you and stay on that path.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was something that was coming to mind earlier too, is just the virtues. Like the virtues are, a perfect example of like something that actually you can be tricked. Cause like, I know like with virtue theology, it's like, if you actually are excelling in one virtue, then you're excelling in all the virtues. Mm-hmm. But if you're sort of feigning a virtue, like if you're faking a virtue or you think you have a virtue, but actually you maybe just have an excess of like zeal. We know zeal actually can be like a virtue if it's, you know, true. I think it's zeal is actually the is like the effect of a intense love. Mm-hmm. So having this intense love for God primarily, and then for others, causes you to have a great amount of zeal. And that's obviously that's like the right definition. So that would be real zeal. But if that love, if you're like, if you're falling for the trap of like self-love, and so you have this an inordinate amount of zeal for love of self or love of what you can get for yourself, or basically even just your own ideas. So I mean that's where sort of like ideological passions come along, and like we can fall prey to them as well. Like we can get like ideological about things that are really just our own way of looking at things, mm-hmm. rather than like, oh, this is like church teaching. It can just be like maybe our favorite aspect of it, and so then we can get like overly zealous because we have this particular idea, and then we can forget that okay, there is actually a corresponding or a, you know, like you said, another virtue on the other side of the spectrum that's going to actually help kind of bring that balance,
yeah,
and pull us back to real, like having, you know, real virtue. Because practicing, I think it's like if you have the genuine virtue, then yeah, you're going to excel in all the virtue.
Right.
But if you're mistaking, you know, and having this like false virtue, then like practicing other virtues it may help pull you out of like I guess a dialectic of virtue, you know.
Well, I mean, so, yeah, there is a dialectic there, but yeah. Like with the virtue, it is the correct way is to not go to either extreme,
right?
So it's not really a synthesis, but it's more of a moderation.
Yeah. Well, and like I bring up zeal because zeal can be definitely one of those. It's really strongly connected to this idea of like falling for a dialectic. So, you know, you see all these people becoming very passionate and go out in the street and start protesting or fighting or doing something. But those are the easiest things that then get used by the master dialectician to sort of pit sides against each other. And once there's an aggrieved class, you know, it's, you know, dialectics are all about like class warfare and warfare in general and pitting people against each other and getting them to do things that are like violent and destructive and chaotic that will actually end up bringing society down, or basically, you know, the idea of like even psyops, you know, so like we have the FBI meddling around and trying to, you know, get people to do crazy things so that
be violent,
new laws can be enacted and
absolutely,
you know, basically an agenda for, as we have kind of already covered it, like a one world government, you know,
right?
The agenda for total control, basically enslavement of a population. And, you know, with that, then the elevation of this untouchable group of people who will presumably like rule the world, and you know, with the Antichrist when that happens.
So, right, exactly. So, I mean, and we have to be mindful of that, because you know, like I criticize the Jews and stuff like that a lot, but there's some people that, you know, like in some of these groups, like you were talking about feds will infiltrate these groups, people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people listen to this probably know this, but some may not. Mm-hmm. And they will get you to not only just criticize the Jews, but they will get you to try to join them, try to create these groups that where they plan violence and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then they get these people to do it. And then there's people do the violent thing, right? And then, which is obviously wrong and against Catholic teaching, you know, but they do the thing, and then it gets all over the mainstream media, and they'll say, look at all these, I don't like to say the word, you know, I'll say the word that I usually say, the anti-Shalomitic. Yeah, look at all those people. And it's like, well, you know, and then they can turn around and look at people like me and Attorney Patrice here and say, well, you're just like one of them. You use the same rhetoric that got them violent, which is not really even true or fair at all. All we're doing is publicly criticizing what needs to be criticized as a matter of justice. But that's what they do.
Yeah.
They beat you into going to this extreme that you shouldn't be going to.
Yeah.
just like Satan. Satan baits mm-hmm. you, like the feds will bait you. So you got to be, like our Lord Jesus Christ tells us to be as gentle as doves, but he also tells us to be as wise as serpents. So we have to be on guard. We have to be very mindful, right, of what's out there and what's trying to jump out at us and attack us. And so we can't just be naive and say, okay, well, you know, I'm just fighting against the revolution, so I'm fine. No, you know, like me and Attorney Patrice here all the time think like, okay, I am fighting against the revolution. We are being, you know, very vocal against the revolution, but are we? And I'm sure the same thing is happening with you, Attorney Patrice. But you, when you're praying, you're like, okay, am I going too far? Am I moderating myself in a way that needs to be moderated? Yeah. You know, and when you ask yourself, you look at the saints and see what they do. And I say, generally anymore, I say to myself, well, you know, I didn't say anything worse than St. John Chrysostom said. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're
I love you, St. John.
Yeah. You're in good company if you're willing to say, you know, the truth there. And, yeah. You know, I love all the saints too, but, you know, I've read a lot of Dennis Fahey, and I think the world of his whole work on whether it was the social reign of Christ the King and just this whole breaking down of naturalism versus supernaturalism, which is, you know, he was seeing the earlier stages of the New World Order as it was coming into its own, basically, in the 40s. I mean, you're kind of watching it happen. You're watching the end of like the papal states and like one Catholic nation after another, basically, no longer has a, you know, Catholic constitutions,
right?
Almost no Catholic constitutions from, you know, just 100 years before, you know, the papal states and many Catholic nations. But, you know, he's watching it all crumble with this like secular world order. And he's talking about, you know, this obvious battle, which actually ensued from like the foot of the cross. And of course, this is where E. Michael Jones also picks up his work. Like from the foot of the cross, you have the beginning of this, this apostasy of the people of God, from the true religion. And, you know, in the void of having an actual Messiah who came to offer, like you said, grace, supernatural and sanctifying grace that actually alone can help basically restore all men to mm-hmm. right relationship with God. And the proper order of all things can only be established through this true religion, you know, and this true Messiah. And then, of course, you know, but yeah, from that point, from the foot of the cross, you have this group of people who are essentially doing it in their own power, trying to establish everything that they believed that they were supposed to have with their own strength and with their own natural, you know, means.
Right.
You know, and obviously we know, like, anyone who knows anything about the Jews knows that there's like two main groups. You know, there's a lot of them who, even though they don't really believe some of this stuff, they are kind of like just trying to be good people and wait for the true Messiah. You know, what we see is this other group, you know, most likely and most often is this other group who's, you know, taking sort of center stage. And, you know, as we understand it, most of them are secular, atheistic, or purely naturalist, humanist, secularists, working to establish, you know, either a global regime or a global regime based in one country, you know, so Zionism and globalism. And I mean, obviously that is the enemy, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're worried about falling into a dialectic, you know, just for having understood that and called that out, I mean, that's not really what's, I mean, that's possible. It's possible to fall into a sort of dialectic if you then try to use a natural means to combat this.
Right.
And I think that's where all of these other, you know, efforts, whether it be Franco, Mussolini, or Hitler, they all fall horribly short, because these men, even though they may have had their own spiritual awakenings, so to speak, or maybe they were being pragmatic about their spirituality. You know, we know that most of them were Catholic, like to varying degrees.
They were all born, all three of those men were born Catholic.
So to varying degrees, they were Catholic, which I think
the only one that was a practicing Catholic was Franco.
Franco, for sure. And it seems like you kind of said, Mussolini also sort of picked up his faith at some point, you know, but again, was that like pragmatic or whatever? I guess that's not so much my point, is that they fought primarily with the worldly means.
Right. They used natural means instead of like appealing to supernatural means.
And they were still martyred in a sense, in like a, as like social or political martyrs, because it just, you know, the Jews didn't like them either, you know, obviously. So, you know, there's no joke. And they knew who the enemy was. So that's the other thing they have going for them. They knew who the enemy was, but they didn't know how to, fight the battle. And, you know, that is falling for a dialectic, and not knowing how to fight the battle, because the only antidote to this naturalism is the cross. It is the mass. It is the Catholic Church, absolutely, which is like the only source of sanctifying grace in the world. And so that's how you fight the battle. I mean, for me, that's the answer to all the endless dialectics, is be a good Catholic. Like, you know, find a good parish and frequent the sacraments as often as possible, and raise your family in the faith, and keep your state in life, and do your duties well, you know, and don't let the FBI, you know, goad you into doing something stupid.
Yeah. Like,
they don't have anything better to do.
Right. I mean, I think that's the moral of the story for us, is like, just don't appeal to natural means for a spiritual warfare. 'Cause that's essentially with what, we're fighting with, like, even what I talk about on my website or on my different, you know, social media accounts. It's like, yeah, I talk about, like, even the Jews a lot and stuff like that, but it's still ultimately a spiritual warfare. You know, we're not going to beat them through natural means. We're going to beat them through converting hearts. And that's only by a spiritual warfare and fight and praying and I don't mean just prayer alone. You know, I wouldn't say pray alone. I mean, you should still go out there and do Catholic action. Like, both of us are big proponents of Catholic action. Go out there and raise your voice and let people hear you, like I did, like we do, right? Go out there and speak the truth and try to convert as many hearts as possible, hearts and minds as possible. But still, it's a spiritual warfare. This isn't going to be a war that we win through like actual warfare. It's a spiritual combat.
I mean, this is something we're talking about and preparing for, you know, kinds of things, and it's something that is really fresh in my mind, that like you mentioned, young men, especially men and young men especially, they see all this stuff happening and they're angry. Actually, most men are just really angry all the time. And course, there's a lot of reason to be, you know, there's a lot of things feeding into that anger too, is like, everything is easy. Everything's supposed to be about you and pleasuring yourself. And, you know, and so we're just not good at being uncomfortable and not liking things. And yet at the same time, we feel so hopeless because, you know, it sort of seems like, you know, we have these overlords and this whole system that really is just, you know, it's like being in an occupied, you know, land, you know, which the majority of the world is at this point. It's so bad. But yeah, I think men are so desperately, unsure, you know, sort of lost, not sure what they can even do. And so I think actually providing, you know, some kind of action is one of the best things you can do. That isn't just a psyop. That isn't just like, we're going to have a big political, basically we're going to do, you know, we're going to create the new Third Reich, you know, all the time. Like that's, you know, there's a number of like, you know, you have the Patriot Front and you have the Proud Boys and you have all these, you know, PSYOP groups, you know, or if they're not PSYOP groups, they look like PSYOP groups. And really they're all they're doing is offering a worldly, you know, solution. But, you know, I think, you know, this is something we've been talking about, is, you know, action that is prayer. You know? Right. So men getting out publicly, getting the rosary out and praying publicly. I mean, it's needed, but it's needed because it is actually doing something, you know? And I think
it's either
you don't have anything to do and so you're going to stay home and like watch sports ball or play video games or just drink or whatever, which, you know, and then the alternative is, well, overthrow the government, and well, we're not going to be able to do that. So
right,
you
know?
So you have those two like ridiculous options, and it's like obviously, you need something like in the middle there, where if you're a Catholic and you believe in the life of grace, you know, that comes through sacrifice and prayer, then that's what you need to do. But just do it publicly, do it in a public way.
Yeah, that, and I want to also bring up another dialectic really quick too that you kind of went through real quick but needs to be talked about. There's this dialectic here, like with a lot of these young men, and you know, and I sympathize to a certain degree, and I think at one point when I was converting, I even could have counted myself amongst them, but at this point not anymore. But there's a lot of young men and the Catholic community now that really want to synthesize, talking about dialectics, they want to synthesize like Catholicism with white nationalism or Catholicism with Nazism or something like that. And these things are mutually exclusive. I mean, there's certain things that can be syncretized, but then it's like if you syncretize them to Catholicism, then they're not really... they're not really that thing anymore. Like, for instance, like the Nazis were corporatists as far as their economics go, right? So if you wanted to build a Catholic state, like I do, I want a Catholic state. That's why I call myself Catholic state. But if you want to make a Catholic state, you could have corporatist policies, economic policies. I mean, that's really 100% consistent with what Pope Leo XIII talks about in Rerum Novarum and other encyclicals, right? So you can have that kind of corporatist policy, but you can't like hate non-whites. you can't see non-white races as being essentially animals. And really, if you do that, you're basically a Jew, because that's what Jews believe. And like in their Talmud, they believe non-Jews are animals. They believe Jews are the only real humans that have like some divine spark of God, and all the other goyim are just animals. So, and that's what we're saying, folks, is like the extremes, the opposite reaction is basically the same as what they're reacting to. The Nazis are basically the same as the Jews. I know this is going to ruffle a lot of feathers, but they are.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons why even just the philosophical idea, like if we try to do it in a positive way, like, oh, well, you know, as long as we're the dialectician, we can get it right.
Right.
You know,
as
long as we're the alchemist here and we're going to put these things together and create the world we want, like... like, you know, and we're Catholics, so it should work out, right? Like, it's like, no. I mean, we know that, like, and you know, people will use this term, like, well, you know, we just need to baptize this. You know, some people will say that, and it's like, you know, they'll refer to historical examples of how, like, Thomas Aquinas sort of synthesizes Aristotle with church teaching. You know, but there's only a... I don't know of a lot of other examples where an entire philosophical thought is synthesized with Christianity. And yeah, theoretically there could be another one, but I mean, that's Thomas Aquinas, the angelic doctor. Like, do you think you're Thomas Aquinas, the angelic doctor, who's going to, you know, find a way to synthesize, you know, various pagan ideas? And I mean, that's often what is referred to as like, oh, we baptize pagan things. And it's like, well, no, typically I don't think that's what happened there either, right? Like, so when there was pagan things, they were used to point people to the truth, but they weren't used to basically say, oh, look, if we put your pagan ideas with our Christian ones, we get this like neat little pseudo pagan Christian, you know, Catholic. I mean, we get ridiculed all the time by Protestants for being pagans for that very idea.
But that's not how it works. That's the difference. That's conflating synthesis with syncretism.
Right.
Syncretism is where you baptize things. Like, for instance, when like in the 4th century, when Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, they did go into the temples. They sprinkled holy water and salt everywhere, and they turned those temples into churches. Yeah. But like they would go through things piece by piece. They would go through statues and say, "Okay, is this statue? Can I use this to be look like our Lord or our Lady, or is it so? Or is this just abominable and needs to be destroyed?" Yeah. And they destroyed a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got rid of a lot of things and only kept something that they can use to basically be Catholic. And they would just, they would change its identity, you know, to fit the Catholic religion. But that's much different than a synthesis, which is, would be saying, okay, well, oh, I like that Apollo guy. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to make that Apollo guy. He's going to be another Catholic god. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And like there's Protestant sects that accuse us of doing that. But no, you can't do that. And the same thing with like the Nazism and Catholicism. You can't be like, whoa, dude, bruh, Hitler's base, bruh. Since Hitler's so base, I'm going to make him a saint and I'm going to pray to him. And, you know, since I don't like Black people that much, I'm gonna hate them and say they're subhuman, but I'm still Catholic too, bruh. I'm like,
and use the hard R.
Yeah, use the hard R. Yeah, you're like, no, you're not Catholic then. I mean, there's nothing wrong with loving, if you're white, loving white people and saying, you know, I really have a fondness for my own people and my own country and stuff. So I'm not saying that. I'm not criticizing people that have that. Like, I even have that to a certain extent. Me and Attorney Patrice do. But still, it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's filial piety. But, like, we're criticizing are those that are, like, they actually say that Jews and non-whites are subhuman.
Essentially, what they're doing is trying to baptize Hegel. So all you're doing is taking these philosophers and saying, oh, actually, Hegelian dialectics is good, and we're going to do it. And again, because we're doing it, and we're Catholic, and we mean well, it'll work out good.
Yeah.
And it's like, sorry, no. Like, you're blending truth and error. You know, you're making, you know, and you think because you think because of your elevated sense of like, enlightened, you know, understanding that you'll be smart enough to like sort of sort out the bad parts and get all of them out before you like blend it together. And obviously, we shouldn't have so much trust in ourselves, you know?
Absolutely. It's pride. It's pride. Yeah. And I mean, like, it's funny that you're saying this because you and I know that group I created a few years back that was, I created a group full of a bunch of young men like ourselves, Catholic young men, but it was like a quote unquote based in red pilled group of Catholic young men, and you know, it eventually just became more of a white nationalist or Nazi group than it was a Catholic group. And like, I'm not even kidding. Like, people were talking, like you said Hegel, like people were like saying, you know what I really like? I really like German idealism. And I'm like, my eyes got really big. I'm like, because I was a philosophy major in college. And I'm just like, what? You mean like Kant and Hegel? Like you, like Nietzsche? Well, maybe Nietzsche's not actually, but
they probably isn't, but yeah.
They kind of group him in sometimes.
At least
Kant
and Hegel are in there, and there's a couple others.
And I'm like, Kant and Hegel? I'm like, I went off on them. I'm like, are you guys serious?
Yeah.
Like, that is what
Protestant, deist.
That's what we criticize the modernists in the church for doing as being Hegelian.
Yeah,
that's what we criticize them for doing is being Hegelian. And you're
it's another example of this. Like, instead of going back to the church for wisdom, after a lot of cultural revolutions, after a lot of Christendom essentially is lost, we're thinking, well, in order to get things right, we're going to have to go back. But no, we're not going back to the church. We're going back to like a handful of Protestant, German idealists
who were all deists, you know, and yeah. we're secular humanists.
Yeah.
So we're going to go back to secular humanists because they're super based and they were really smart. You know,
I think they just like the fact that it's called German idealism, and they're like, yeah. "Oh, that's based in yeah. red pill, bro."
Well, and that's the problem too with like, yeah, some of this, I guess, cultural pride or whatever. Like, that's not piety. They basically think that like, okay, German, you know, is a mixed bag at this point.
Yeah.
So if you go back to the 1700s, you got to be careful who you're listening to because yeah. obviously that's, you know, or the 1800s, 1700s, 1800s, you know. You know, it's like, why can't we just go back and learn from what the church always taught? You
know? Yeah. I mean, like,
why are we shortchanging ourselves and just like looking for Protestants to baptize, baptize their thought, baptize right. their ideas.
Especially when like a lot of their ideas were just repackaged anyways. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, like Kant, like he didn't really create anything new. He, mm-hmm. you know, the categorical imperative or whatever yeah. is like, that's all that is just, he repackaged natural law.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what he did. Like, study natural law and study the categorical yeah. imperative. And it's like, okay, so, yeah.
I mean, that's the problem, too. Yeah. Like, if you go back to these people who were like, oh, yeah, the original, like, Republicans, well, who are they? Well, obviously, like, in France, that's the revolutionaries. Those are the people who were, you know, slaughtering Catholics.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people, I think, you know, want to go back to yesterday's conservatives.
Yeah.
You know, and be like yesterday's conservatives. Well, yesterday's conservatives were like, you know, they were the revolutionaries. So, yeah, this idea that like we're going to idolize, you know, some of these people who weren't quite it, you know, even idolizing, you know, like let's say Mussolini, you know, thinking he was so great. It's like he did some cool stuff, but. Man, like, there's so much missing with Mussolini. So, like, yeah. you try to make him your hero.
There's so like, much deficiency there.
All you're going to yeah. put together is something that's going to crumble again in a few, you know, decades, right. if you could even accomplish it. So, you know, it's about going back to the Catholic state. You know, we need Christ as king. We need
Amen.
We need the church to be, like, the rights of the church to be, you know, to be preferred over the, you know, like to the detriment actually of all other religions, you know, like,
right.
Like,
I mean, yeah. like to religious liberty, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, there's a religious tolerance we have to have, right, like, right. you know, if you look at Sikh, Judaism, right. non yeah. or whatever, it's like,
yeah, we can't round people up and just slaughter them for not converting.
Or yeah. We can't force conversions or anything like that, but yeah. no, they don't. Yeah, they don't have equal rights. They shouldn't have equal rights in the Catholic country.
Right. It's just you know. It's not Catholic teaching.
It's not Catholic teaching, yeah.
Obviously, there's confusion about that right now. But, yeah. But it's not Catholic tradition. It's not what the church has always done.
So, yeah.
But yeah.
Alrighty. Well, this has been a good podcast. First podcast, I think. Hopefully, yeah. Everybody else out there got some value out of it. And, we wish you all, what do we wish them anything?
We wish them all,
a Merry Christmas. God, no, it's too early for that.
Godspeed.
Godspeed. stay away from extremes and be That's mindful right. of these dialectics. Yeah. Don't fall into Satan's snares either way.
Yeah.
Just. Always go back to what the church teaches. Go back to scripture. Read your Bible.
You're already on yeah. an FBI list, yeah. so you might as well go down for the faith and not some like political BS. Just make it your life goal to pray for the grace of martyrdom.
Yes, yes, amen. So we will talk to you later. Take care and God bless.